Members of the committee, please take your seats. Meeting of Senate Finance and Claims will come to order. Can you take the roll, sir?
Vice Chair Glimm.
Here.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Excuse me.
Senator Solomon.
Here.
Senator McGilvery.
Excuse me.
Senator Boldman. Senator Bartel.
Here.
Senator Mandeville.
Here.
Senator Morgeau.
Here.
Senator Lenz.
Here.
Senator Lang.
Here.
Senator Lynch.
Here.
Senator Bogner.
Excused.
Senator Cuff.
Here.
Senator Flowers. Senator Fuller.
Excused.
Senator Vance.
Here.
Senator Pope.
Here.
Senator Wellborn.
Here.
Chairman Asp.
Here. Members of the committee, I know some of you have engagements elsewhere. That's fine. We're going to hear five bills today in the order that's on the board. Those of you in the audience, remember to silence your cell phones. And is there any other business for the good of the order before we start hearing bills? Seeing none, we'll open the hearing on Senate Bill 108. Senator Usher.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Senator Barry Usher from Senate District 20. Last name's Usher, U-S-H-E-R. I have the best bill of this session before you. I will try and stay on the fiscal note, unlike last bill I had. The chairman was very kind to me. But this actually is, I guess what you would say, usually technology over the last few decades has cost us money. And I would say that technology in this instance is not costing us money. It's making us lose revenue. Basically a good policy. With technology that we paid for to get computers in law enforcement's cars and technology we got in the dispatcher's area, they have the information from the insurance card on that technology, which costs you money, quite a few sessions, and now it's coming back to bite us for $164,000 in lost revenue. So I would say, based on that small fiscal note, that this is a good policy and it's well worth the loss in that revenue.
Thanks, Senator Usher. Are there proponents here for Senate Bill 108? Proponents, please, for Senate Bill 108. Mr. Olson, any online?
No, Mr. Chairman, no one is raising their hand at the moment.
Opponents for Senate Bill 108. Any opponents in the room? Any online, Mr. Olson?
No, Mr. Chairman, none online.
Any informational witnesses in the room for Senate Bill 108? Informational witnesses online, Mr. Olson?
No, Mr. Chairman, no informational witnesses.
Questions from the committee of the sponsor. Senator Cuff.
Mr. Chairman, would you indulge me one question that is not dollar related?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Senator Cuff.
To the sponsor.
Senator Usher.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cuff.
Thank you. Senator, Mr. Chairman, Senator Arthur Usher. I heard the presentation before, and I liked it. The question that I wish I would have asked, what does that do other states? Are they going to show reciprocity? In particular, if I'm driving across the Idaho Panhandle, they love to stop Montana cars, or maybe it's just mine. But if I don't have proof of the paper in the car, are they going to accept that? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cuff, I would assume that it would go with all motor vehicle reciprocity that we have, because not every state requires it. And if you happen to be in a state that, you know, or from a state that doesn't require it, like the East Coast, they don't require your insurance card, we're not going to write them a ticket because they're not in violation of their requirements. So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any further questions of the sponsor? Seeing none, Senator, would you like to close?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Senator Bartel put his hand up.
Oh, Senator Bartel, I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And follow up with Senator Cuff. So will this potentially save the insurance companies money by not, they won't have to print those cards out and send them all out to the individuals?
Mr. Chair, Senator,
any idea?
Senator Bartel and Mr. Chair, I believe it would not only save the insurance companies, but it'll save individual drivers too, because some insurance companies won't send you a card and they charge you to get onto their app. And so you're allowed to have the app, but if it costs you money, it'll save. And so we're transferring money from the government, from the people.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Senator, close on your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for some good questions. And the only objection I would have is I would assume everyone on this committee would be proponents for this, because if you do get pulled over like Senator Cuff, you're usually digging in your glove box or somewhere else looking for that because you can't remember where you left it. So you would get a ticket. Is a great bill, and I hope you do pass it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. This closes the hearing. Members of the committee, we will now open the hearing on Senate Bill 132.
Thank you, Chair Esp and committee members. My name is Becky Beard, Senate District 40. I'm here today on behalf of Senate Bill 132 that was re-referred down here. And this revises the way OPI prorates payments to school districts in a fiscal year. It'll cost the general fund an additional, Chair Esp and committee members, I think that there is a draft revised fiscal note on this, which will be changing the numbers just a tad. I don't know if that's been handed out or you have reference at the chair's position, but it is very close to the original fiscal note. It'll cost this program revision will cost the general fund an additional about $249,000 in fiscal year 24 and an average of $267,000 each year through fiscal year 2027. Montana schools that submit a plan to the Ag Education Program's OPI specialist must receive $1,000 and an additional $1,000 per full-time equivalent Ag Ed teacher based on the National Quality Program Standard Evaluation. Attention to our Ag Ed programs increases the number of pathways for our state's students' successes. Now, on the fiscal note, the revised fiscal note that I have, there is in the technical detail a table that outlines the cost of the program in 2024 itself. And the plan of improvement on 109 programs currently existing is $1,000 times the 109 is $109,000. The Ag Ed teachers, 129 of them. Then the detailed budget to increase the quality of the Ag Ed program would be an additional $1,000 per 109 programs. Online Ag Ed credits would be an additional $7,500. And that's important, especially to our rural high schools in the state. And then new programs is going to be an additional, I think, three programs per year would require an additional $22,500 in the let's see, at the 10-year average for over a three-year period. So if you take that average out to 10 years, okay? And then we're looking at a total cost of advancing ag ed program revisions, about $406,000 overall. I believe that's correct, but I'm going to get further confirmation on that. We're looking at three new programs per year over the next 3 years. We can see that we can expand this program to further our student involvement and help keep our kids in the state of Montana with promising opportunities in the agricultural industry, thereby enhancing our economy. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I will sit back and let folks approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And just for the committee's knowledge, we're going to get some of these printed and get to you, the new fiscal notes, so they'll be coming shortly. Are there any proponents to Senate Bill 132? Proponents, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Esp, members of the committee. My name is Jasmine Krotkov, and that's spelled K-R-O-T-K-O-V, and I come to you from the Montana Farmers Union. We stand in support of Senate Bill 132 because it brings us closer to our goal, the goal that our members have set, to support equitable, quality, inclusive education for all levels, because it benefits not only to individuals, but to our entire state as well. Expanding agricultural education has the added benefit of helping kids understand how they can have a future on the land. We're glad to see more opportunities to develop ag programs in rural schools, and we urge a due pass. Thank you so much.
For the proponents, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Sheridan Johnson on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. That's S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N. Johnson is a common spelling. We thank Senator Beard for bringing forth this bill and all of those who helped it get to this point. Two of the four pillars of the Montana Chamber's strategic plan are workforce development and entrepreneurship. We are strong supporters of career and technical education and would urge your support on this bill. The unique three-circle model found in agriculture education allows students to learn in the classroom, develop their technical and leadership skills through FFA, and gain hands-on experience as an employee or entrepreneur through their supervised agricultural experiences. In order to meet the growing needs of our workforce, especially in a state where agriculture is the number one industry, we need to continue to support the teachers that are preparing our students to enter the workforce in communities large and small. These teachers are working hard every day to invest in our students by staying up to date with the changing agriculture industry while tackling the other challenges that may come with a career in education. Providing this funding on an annual basis rather than biennially will better allow agriculture teachers to meet the changing needs of their program and community. This funding enables ag educators to purchase the tools, supplies, technologies, and curriculums necessary to create and maintain a program that reflects the ever-changing innovation found in the ag industry. To meet the needs of Montana's workforce, we need to invest in programs like this one and urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rachel Cone, C-O-N-E, and I'm here today on behalf of the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. We're here today in support of Senate Bill 132. Ag education is critical around this state to keep young people and students engaged in our state's largest industry, which is agriculture. The bill secures more funding when applied for to provide more tools that are important for schools to keep their ag education programs going. The bill shows the different costs for the current school districts and employees with the assumption of an increase in new programs in the year to come. And it's dependent on appropriation being less than the total amount for what the Montana school districts qualify for. This additional money is definitely a worthwhile cause for ag education and keeping folks involved with agriculture in the whole state. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents. For the proponents. Any proponents online, Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have several people that would like to be proponents.
So So first up.
First up, we have
Kellen Stanley. Unmute yourself, sir.
Howdy.
Go ahead, state your name and spell your last name.
Certainly. My name is Kellen, K-E-L-L-A-N, Stanley, S-T-A-N-D-L-E-Y. Can I go?
Yes, sir, go ahead and keep in mind we're talking about why we think it's worth the money that's
Absolutely.
Proposed.
Chairman Est, members of the committee, my name, as I said, is Kellen Stanley. I'm an ag teacher and FFA advisor in Bainville. I'm also vice president of the Montana Association of Agricultural Educators, who I'm representing today. I could talk about the benefits of ag ed, but I don't think that's the issue here. I think that by and large across the state, people support the work that ag teachers do. They believe in our profession. The issue today is on the financial support aspects of this. I really understand and appreciate a judicious approach to spending taxpayer money, but I feel that SB 132 is a worthwhile investment of funds. We have more than 8,000 students across the state that are involved in ag ed in Montana, preparing to go out and hopefully get jobs and become industry leaders within agricultural and adjacent fields. But in order for us to be able to prepare students to do that, we need to be able to keep current with industry and provide them with experiences that prepare them for that work. I'm in awe of a lot of what my colleagues are doing across the state, and in my position as vice president, I get to talk to a lot of them. And what amazes me even more than the work that they're doing is, in some cases, how they're able to do it with the things that they are going without, because it's not in the budget. As ag teachers, a lot of times we have to make tough decisions between being able to update our curriculum, implement new materials and equipment into the classroom, or replace things that break, or just simply use the limited budgets that we have in order to keep our program going and buy the materials we need to get through the year. But it's not the teachers who are suffering when we have to make those tough decisions. At the end of the day, it's the students who suffer, and long-term, it's the employers who suffer when they can't find students that are able to fill those jobs. I understand that an increase of approximately $250,000, $260,000 per year, that's a big ask, regardless of our state's fiscal situation. But I do want to point out that for our ag programs across the state, this is not empty your wish list money. For a lot of our programs, this is the funding that's needed in order to be able to continue providing high-quality education that is industry current and industry relevant. Speaking for my personal chapter, my program that I run, our Advancing Ag Ed for this biennium funded part of a TIG welder. I've been teaching 10 years, and I've had more than 100 students go through the program. This is the first time that they will be able to learn one of the basic welding processes, and the Advancing Ag Ed funding did not cover the entire cost of the welder. The previous biennium before that, we built a small greenhouse that's about half the size of what we really should be using. And our greenhouse that we had before had been unusable for several years before that. I'm in a fortunate district. My district is very supportive. A lot of ag teachers don't get the kind of support that I do, and we are still struggling with some of those things so that students are graduating with basic blind spots. This money would, for most schools, be $3,000 a year because it's spread out across so many programs. A lot of those schools are C schools, and I can tell you our costs don't scale. A welder costs me the same as it costs a double A school. And so for a lot of our programs, this is really critical funding that is needed for materials, equipment, and updating, as well as curriculum. So one more example I'd like to share is that a lot probably the most common concern I hear from ag teachers is, I don't know where to get good curriculum. The gold standard for ag ed curriculum requires teachers to attend a two-week training that costs $3,000 per pathway. A lot of us teach two, three, four different pathways, and so this could literally be the difference between that, and that's the sort of thing that eventually leads to attrition, which concerns me greatly. The legislature has long recognized the value of Montana's ag ed programs through the Advancing Ag Ed Fund, but it's been several years since that funding has increased. Inflation's hitting our programs hard, along with everyone else. We've made numerous strides since that funding was implemented in numbers, participation, and quality. But amazing as my peers are, it's hard to keep improving without additional resources. We know that many members on this committee and across the state have been very supportive of ag ed at the local levels as well as the state levels, and we want to thank you for that. We're here today to ask you to reaffirm the legislature's commitment to Montana's ag ed by providing us with a budget increase that matches the vocal support that we receive for the work that we do by voting yes on SB 132. Doing so will allow us to continue in our mission to prepare Montana's future welders, veterinarians, agronomists, game wardens, and most of all, farmers and ranchers to be outstanding in their field. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I'll open myself up to any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Stanley. We'll get to questions later. Further proponents online, Ms. Hoppe.
Ms. Hoppe is not raising her hand, Mr. Chairman. And now she has. Just one moment, please.
Where is she? Oh, Ms. Hoppe, go ahead. Unmute yourself and go ahead.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Something changed to... and there we go. Oh. We don't have a Zoom meeting for a year or so, and you forget how to do it. Hi there. My name is Lori Hoppe, last name spelled H-O-P-P-E. I really appreciate your time this afternoon, and I'm really excited to just give you a few more pieces of information to consider in hopes that you will pass SB 132. I am a teacher, ag ed teacher, and FFA advisor in Gardner, Montana. This is my 10th year here, 14th year total. Just real quick, I want to touch on some examples of things I've used the original Advancing Ag Ed funds for. 10 years ago, I used the funds to help start this program. And we didn't know it at the time, but it ended up being fulfilling a huge hole as industrial tech teachers that had been longstanding in the school retired or resigned. They weren't able to fill those positions. And there seems to be a considerable teacher shortage in the industrial tech specifically. And our school wasn't able to fulfill those positions. So over the years, I've absorbed what was previously taught by industrial technology. I think that's a very common thing happening across Montana. Ag ed teachers seem to be coming out of MSU and from other states at a higher rate than industrial tech. And so as schools struggle, especially Class D schools, to find teachers, they're looking to ag ed because we can meet a lot of those same content areas and meet some of those same needs. And so I am a prime example of that happening here in Gardner. And I was able to use Advancing Ag Ed to buy some of the initial things that we needed to kind of transition and add on the Ag Ed piece. Kellen, previous speaker Kellen alluded to or talked about the gold standard of curriculum. We call it CASE, Curriculum for Agri-Science Education. I used in 2019 the funds from that, from Advancing Ag Ed, to get my first pathway training in that curriculum. And so I was able to find and attend that gold standard of curriculum, and I hope to, over the years, expand and continue implementing that even here in our small rural school. And so that was a product of Advancing Ag Ed funds. In more recent years, and in the comments that I wrote, what I have used my advancing ag ed funds is to replace the funding that my school was no longer able to provide for my extended summer contract, which is a common component to ag education. Because agriculture is a season-based industry, most of agricultural production, or a lot of agricultural production, happens in the summer months. And that's when our students are out there learning valuable skills through work-based learning programs that we call supervised ag experiences. They're doing those largely in the summer. In my small Class C school, a lot of students do not work during the school year because they focus on school and sports. And so they're not able to hold their work-based experiences throughout the school year. So then that puts the emphasis in the summer months. In 2018, my school went through another round of budget cuts, and we cut several positions. And even though my position was not cut, they cut my extended contract. And so I've been able to partially, I hate to use the word reimburse because that sounds like poor accounting or something, but been able to kind of reimburse my time that I spend in the summer months doing SAE visits, where I visit students and their employers, along with many other summer activities that ag ed teachers and students partake in. I use the advancing ag ed funds to do that. In part, I have pared down my hours considerably. I had a 25-day contract, and now I probably work about 10 days, and I've really had to cut some things. For example, one of them being maintenance and improving equipment in my wood and metal shop. And so if whatever I can't get done in the school year kind of just gets thrown to the side, and I'm not able to keep up with that. For example, I currently have a CNC router with the brand new software, but I have not found time and am not going to donate my time in the summer in order to get trained on that. This is an example of something that's kind of been reduced because of the lack of extended contract. Just a couple more points, and then I won't take any more of your time. The one other thing I want to emphasize is something that you may be aware of, but how much school populations are changing across Montana. We see a lot of our Class C schools continuing to shrink. Gardner is a gateway community to Yellowstone National Park, and that has proved to have some major challenges, particularly in the housing. But I know that we're not alone in the shrinkage of our student population, as rural areas tend to get more rural and schools get smaller and smaller. That stretches resources, that makes teachers do more with less, both financially and with our time. The other thing that we're also seeing kind of counter to that is the growth that happens in certain areas of Montana. Due to COVID and other whatever it means, we're seeing that people are moving to rural states to escape urban areas. We can even probably attribute a small portion of that to, you know, hit TV series Yellowstone and people trying to find the Dutton Ranch. So we're seeing school populations kind of fluctuate a lot. Large schools, as they get larger, again, get stretched thin, resources are stretched thin because, you know, A and B takes, you know, it takes a little while for A and B funds to catch up either one way or the other. And so, you know, I wrote in my comments yesterday that our school is now going to cut two FTE for next school year as one of those jumps in A and B with our student population declining. And so, but then big schools, it takes a little while to catch up, and they have overloaded classes and teachers and programs that are stretched thin.
So, Ms. Hoppe, yes. I think I know you well enough that I can ask you to wrap it up in a couple sentences here, because we have a whole bunch of more bills yet to do tonight, please.
Sure thing. So, yes, I was coming to a close. So anyhow, just reiterating that, like Kellen had said, that keeping up with technology, with curriculum, you know, I know that the economy affects everyone in their positions, but teachers are continually being asked to do more with less. And so, and I can tell you that that we continue to provide opportunities for our students, but specifically this increase in funding would double what my small school receives in funding to support my program that does metal shop, woodworking, and greenhouse, plus all the regular agriculture curriculum. And so, you know, 3,000 to some schools will definitely help, but in my school it will have double the impact. And so that is huge for the 35 students that come through my doors every year, and can be really impactful to them, you know, now and moving forward.
Thank you. Seeing no further proponents online, any opponents in the room? Any opponents in the room? Any opponents online, Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no opponents in the room.
Are there any informational witnesses in the room? Welcome, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ken Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y. I represent the Office of Public Instruction. I'm the former CFO and back part-time helping during the legislative session to review bills and write fiscal notes and stuff like that. And I'm available for any questions you have about the fiscal note for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Any further informational witnesses in the room?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eric Tillman. I work for Montana Office of Public Instruction, and I'm the Agricultural Education Specialist for the state.
Further informational witnesses? Any informational witnesses online, Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no informational witnesses.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Vice Chair Ellis.
Thank you. For the sponsor, please. Mr. Chair, Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard, on the fiscal note on page, well, it's on both fiscal notes. It's on page 3 of the original and the bottom of 3 and goes spills into 4 on the new fiscal note. But there appears to be three technical notes that OPI, I believe, would have put on. And I wondered if you, none of them seem fatal. They seem like clarification things. I wondered if you would have any problems with working to take those technical notes off of the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Senator.
I would commit, if you were willing to do that, to work with you, show you the amendments beforehand. They seem small to me, but it seems like it would perhaps be a good thing to take care of.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Ellis, may I refer that, please, to the technical authors?
Yeah,
here in the room.
Before you do, Senator, I have a quick question on the fiscal note also.
Okay.
So you're proposing to move from about $150,000 a year to $500,000 over the biennium. Tell me why you think that's an idea that whose time has come.
Mr. Chair, based on those numbers and based upon the amount of interest from across the state in our second and third class districts especially, we need to get the word out that this is a program that will help further with this investment, help further the growth and expansion of not only these opportunities for the kids in our rural schools, but also to help support this major industry for the state of Montana and to also help entice our kids to stay here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
And would you like me to refer that?
Yes, Senator Ellis, would you like to refer the question?
Yes, to Mr. Bailey, I think is perhaps the person.
Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ellis. So I wrote these technical notes. I agree with you. I think they're small. And I think the first two in particular, or sorry, the first one and the third one are pretty simple. The first one I would put the word either in, so it's either or to make sure it's required that you have to do one or the other. The second one is just a note that, again, when I talked to the governor's office, the existing statute that's not really part of the changes in the bill refers to a special revenue account that it turns out doesn't exist. And so it's just a note that that would be a good cleanup thing. It doesn't have to be part of this bill. And the last one is just the conflict of having in here that there's a note that says that if there's insufficient funding, the OPI will prorate, and then has the instruction that the OPI must pay. And we've hit that in the past as a conflict, saying that if we must pay and the legislature doesn't fund it, we feel obligated to come back and ask for a supplemental, even though it says we should prorate, because, again, it says we must pay. So that's the basis, and I agree with you. I think they're small.
Can I follow up with Senator Beard?
Yes, Vice Chair Ellis. Senator Beard.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard, given the explanation that you just heard, are you willing to try to clear up these technical notes on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair. Absolutely, we can work with that to get some clarifications and a little bit more cleanup.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Bailey, could I ask you one more question? It's sort of tangential to this bill, but so this bill spends some money on certain programs and or teachers. A couple days ago, we kicked out a bill that repaid loans for first, second, and third year teachers. Can those teachers also count towards these kind of monies in this bill?
Mr. Chair, for the Quality Educator Loan Program, one of the requirements is that the individual has a valid teaching certificate, which, if it's in Ag Chem, would qualify the district, not the employee, for the payment of the $1,000.
Great, thank you, Senator McGillivray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask the sponsor this question, but she can certainly refer it.
Mr. Chair, Senator McGillivray.
Yeah, thank you. I read the fiscal note, but I can't really get my question answered here. So I'm going to ask, how much could an individual school receive through this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGillivray, it says $1,000 per full-time equivalent ag ed teacher, but it has to be applied for by the school first and foremost. And then $1,000for the specialist, and an additional $1,000 per full-time equivalent. And Senator McGillivray, Mr. Chair, I'm going to just check back here to see if Mr. Bailey has any additional information.
So I guess
would you like
question,
to redirect?
No, I guess the follow-up question is that. Okay. So what we're talking is each school could get $3,000.
Each qualifying school that applies. Now I will refer that, Mr. Chair.
I think Mr. Bailey, could you offer an answer to that question?
Mr. Chair, Senator, so right now a lot of schools, Class E schools with one teacher, will get about $3,000. If, say, you have a Kalispell which has six ag teachers, they could get up to $8,000 a year is what they could get at the max. Okay. Right now, the way it's worded in MCA, Kalispell, they get $12,000 per biennium.
Okay, so follow-up.
Follow-up, Senator.
So let's just stay with a small school that's getting $3,000 with one teacher. Would the $3,000 go to the program or to the teacher?
Goes to the program. And it's to help, Mr. Chair, Senator, it'll stay with the program. It goes to improve what they need for students. Say, if it's to get kids FFA jackets, to help cut the cost, to help those students, or maybe it's to buy that bandsaw for the program, or say it's to get that CASE curriculum, which is that curriculum for agri-science, that stays with the program. It gives those kids the opportunity to get a science credit for an ag class.
Mr. Chairman, one more follow-up.
Senator, one more.
Okay, thank you. So is this set up where it can expand to more schools as we go along?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. As if you look at when this bill, well, the original Advancing Ag came out in 2009, we've added a total of, I had to get this number, 37 ag programs in the state. This year alone, we added Havre, Florence, Frenchtown, Drummond, a second ag teacher in Billings, and a sixth ag teacher in Kalispell.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, would the sponsor care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, and I'd like to acknowledge the good works that the informational witnesses provided here today. But yes, I'd like to close by saying this is important to invest in for not only our state, our economy, but for our children to be able to capture some of them who aren't tracking specifically to generic or collegiate scholastic endeavors, but they're going to be captured in these areas and a number of different opportunities for their future job performances and opportunities to earn money. This is a good bill, and I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 132. We'll open the hearing on Senate Bill 19. Senator Rozier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Keith Regier, that's R-E-G-I-E-R, Senator from Senate District 3. Senate Bill 19 we heard on the floor, I think, a couple days ago. And basically what it does is put the sentencing for disorderly conduct back to pre-2017. And I've past times when I've been in front of finance or appropriations committees, they say, talk about the money. We know about the bill. Talk about the money. Well, fiscal notes, they do a lot of assuming. And this fiscal note does not assume the savings that stopping major crimes would have in here. And a soft on crime creates more crime, and that has a high price tag. I found it interesting. We had a recent opening for the House, a House seat in Billings, and the three candidates, when they interviewed with the commissioners, all three of them talked about the problem of high crime in Billings, a big issue there. And this bill helps. I showed a chart on the floor where Billings, the arrest for disorderly conduct has really dropped off. Well, that's because there aren't any. They're just put them back out on the street. As far as the money, last night we heard about debt-free in 23. There will be $40 million, so that ought to be able to cover any fiscal note on this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Any proponents to Senate Bill 19?
Good afternoon, Chair Essman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I'm here today representing both the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and the Montana County Attorneys Association in support of Senate Bill 19. I concur with Senator Regier, our sponsor, that the purpose here is to stay on the fiscal note and talk about the fiscal note. I'm going to be honest, I'm never overly comfortable staying on the fiscal note, nor am I usually able to do so, but I will try. I want to say that this bill is part of a comprehensive package of bills that came out of the Criminal Justice Oversight Council. That council evaluated policies that were passed in 2017 under Justice Reinvestment and came forward with six bills that they thought were necessary to ensure public safety and to make some changes in order to try to realize the objectives of criminal justice reinvestment. Regarding the fiscal note, I think one could argue that, yes, more people will be jailed on the charge of disorderly conduct if this bill passes. But the other side of that coin is if we give law enforcement the tool to put people in jail in cases of disorderly conduct, it will likely prevent officers back at the same location dealing with the same people later in the night on charges of assault or aggravated assault, which have a much bigger and more expensive impact on the overall criminal justice system. So with that said, I would encourage you to look favorably on this bill and pass it out of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbertson. And I'll bet you Chair Esman would have been pleased with your presentation also.
And Mr. Chairman, may I say I was asked to do a Me Too on behalf of Shelby DeMars and the Montana Police Protective Association. They are also in support. She is in another hearing and unable to be here in person. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents for Senate Bill 19 in the room? Further proponents? Mr. Olson, any proponents online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no proponents online.
Any opponents in the room?
Chairman,
welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Espin, members of the committee. My name is Maggie Bornstein. That's spelled B-O-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, here on behalf of the ACLU of Montana. We've likewise shared our opposition to this bill in its substantive hearing, but we would like to direct you to the fiscal note to illuminate the increased cost that this will carry to the Office of Public Defender by the amount of nearly $100,000 adjudicating new disorderly conduct charges, which comes with the introduction of jail time upon first offense. We think that that cost is unfair to the taxpayers of Montana and that law enforcement has plenty of discretion available to them. I think we've heard earlier mentioned the Criminal Justice Oversight Council, and I think it's really important to know that the Office of Public Defender played no role in on the Criminal Justice Oversight Council. They had no appointment to do so, and so when you look at that fiscal note and don't see any mention of OPD in these hearings, I think it is important and helpful to you to understand why and look at that, I think, distance between the fiscal note and the general understanding and support and opposition for this bill. I think I would also disagree that we'll later see cost savings from this bill. What we have before us is the initial impact. I did study criminology, and I'm happy to answer questions as they may come to this committee, but I would truly disagree that the fiscal note that we will see in terms of cost savings is reflected in this, and that truly what we see before us is an increase, and we should respond to it as such. So for these reasons, we do ask you to oppose Senate Bill 19, and we do appreciate the opportunity to share our opposition. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bornstein. Further opponents? Any more opponents in the room? Opponents online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have one opponent online.
Ms. Gomez, you're still muted. Unmute your mic.
Chairman S, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Gomez. That's G-O-M-E-Z on behalf of Montana Women Vote. I would likewise like to express our opposition to Senate Bill 19. This bill's criminalization of nonviolent disorderly conduct, including making loud noises or using profane language, increases OPD caseloads at an expense to the state. There's no justification for this cost if this behavior doesn't even pose a risk to public safety as recognized by a peace officer, which is a requirement this bill eliminates. What's more, there is no evidence that low-level offenses, especially those listed here, which I'll repeat include making loud noises or using profane language, lead to more serious crimes, though there's plenty of evidence that incarceration does. For these reasons, along with all those already expressed by the ACLU of Montana, we urge a no vote by this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Any further opponents online? Seeing none. Any informational witnesses in the room? Informational witnesses. Any online, Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no informational witnesses.
Questions from the committee. Vice Chair Glimm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Ms. Bernstein.
Ms. Bernstein.
No problem, Chairman. My apologies, and Senator Glimm.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bernstein, so I assume since you're very concerned about the fiscal note and the cost to the taxpayers that you would be supportive of an amendment that would remove the requirement for OPT to defend disorderly conduct?
Senator Esp, Senator Glimm, we would not support that because it is a constitutional mandate of their office. They defend people when jail time is an opportunity, whether it's one day or the rest of their life. And so that, frankly, would be out of line with the federal constitution and the Montana constitution. So we would not support that amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Flowers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Senator Rozier.
Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rozier, and feel free to re-refer if you need to. Could you just explain what a wait hour is?
Where
it's
are you reading?
On the assumptions, OPD assumes an increase of 450 matters. I assume that's incidents that are going to occur where somebody will be jailed as a result of this law with three wait hours each. And so the calculation is to take the wait hours times the incidents times the contractor rate to come up with the total. And I don't understand what a wait hour is.
Senator Regeer, we have a member of the Criminal Justice Oversight Committee here that may be able to shed light on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what a waited hour is we've in Section D, we've asked OPD to go tell us what a case costs. So this is a three-hour weighted, average weighted cost. You know, a DUI may be 17 hours. I'm just making that 17 up. But a murder may be 1,000 hours. So it's how long does it actually take for OPD to process that case is what the three-hour weighted average of what these typical cases are.
Follow up?
Can I follow up with my colleague from Butte?
If you would yield.
Yeah, thanks. So just make sure I got it then. What they're assuming is that each incident will, on average, result in 3 hours of incarceration, and that times the contract rate times 450 is the total.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're 90% of the way there. It's 3 hours of legal work, not the incarceration work. So to prepare the defense for that charge, it will take a lawyer 3 hours on average. So some may two and a half, some may take 3.5, but on average, when they look at their book of business, it takes 3 hours to prepare for that charge. Three legal hours.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a question for Ms. Gilbertson.
Ms. Gilbertson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gilbertson, when we look at the note, you know, we really see costs associated with OPD. The reality is I think we all know that the jails is a local function, and so certainly it's going to increase demands on jails. And I just want to make sure that your members are okay with that, because I know we've had multiple conversations about unintended consequences, local control, unfunded mandates, and so I just want to make sure that we're not doing that in this instance, and that, you know, if that's the wish of the locals, we're happy to make sure that they do have all of those buzzwords.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynch, I very much appreciate your question and how conscientious you are about the situation in our local jails. You are right, they are full. However, sheriffs have looked at this, and since 2017, they have determined that the elimination of this as a tool for their officers on the street and eliminating the discretion to assign jail time or take someone to jail on disorderly conduct, they would rather see that in statute, have that tool available to them, exercise their discretion, and they will continue to try to manage their jail population. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, Senator, would you care to close?
Thank you. Yeah, public safety has a cost, but a little investment up front can save a lot later on. Thank you, Chairman Esp and committee.
You enunciated that so well. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 19. Members of the committee, we will open the hearing on Senate Bill 54. Senator Hertz.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 54 deals with revising centrally assessed property appraisals, going from 1 year to 2 years. So that's going to have a little bit of an impact on ongoing revenues just because of timing. But some of this, too, I mean, the fiscal note considers that property always increases a little bit marginally in value for the most part. So it's hard to put an exact estimate on this particular bill, but the department's here, and I think they can probably let you dwell down into the detailed questions on that fiscal note, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hertz. Any proponents of Senate Bill 54?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brendan Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-Y. I'm the director of the Montana Department of Revenue. Before you today as a proponent for Senate Bill 54, I'd like to thank Senator Hertz for sponsoring this and bringing it forward to this committee. As some of you probably know, before I took this job for the governor, I was counsel for the Department of Revenue for the prior 27 years, and a good deal of my career was spent in the litigation and resolution of the valuation of properties that were centrally assessed by the Department of Revenue. So this bill's near and dear to my heart because myself and Derek Bell, who was also counsel for the department and is now the division administrator for the division of the Department of Revenue that administers centrally assessed taxes, there's nobody that knows better why we need to do this than Derek and I. And frankly, I'm in the business of doing what this body tells us to do. That green book that you have called the Montana Code Annotated tells me I'm supposed to sign off on the appraisal of every property at 100% of its market value. Nothing more, nothing less. The way the current system sits, we've got practically a skeleton crew centrally assessing 120-some properties, ranging from utilities to pipelines to airlines to railroads, telecoms, in a very compressed time frame doing this annually. And frankly, it takes time to arrive at a reasonable estimate of what a utility property would sell between a hypothetical buyer, a hypothetical seller, on an arbitrary date of 1-1 of whatever year that is. So there's a lot that goes into valuing, say, a utility or a pipeline or what have you. So what this bill will do will basically break up the number of appraisals the Department of Revenue has to do to every other year. So therefore, the value would stick for 2 years. The Department of Revenue would have half as many appraisals to do each year. Now, it sounds like I'm trying to duck work, and that's not the case. What that interim period does, what stretching this out does, is lets my people get better information. We can engage with the taxpayer for much more deeply and much more personally to get the best information possible to arrive at the best estimate of value for that property. And the upside, of course, is the closer we are to agreement, the closer we are to a market value that everybody agrees on, the fewer appeals. And yep, you see a fiscal note that this will run about $1 million a year spread out across 56 counties. And that's that lag, right, on the assumption that value will go up, which is an assumption, by the way, but trends have shown. But I don't ever want to operate on the assumption that it's always going to go up. That little reduction in value, I believe, Mr. Chairman, members, is going to be far outweighed by the reduction in the number of protests, appeals, and wait time that these counties are stuck with. Because once we're embroiled in a tax dispute with a major player, and especially if it's a big one, that difference is paid into a protest fund. And sure, the county can access it, but if, God forbid, the Department of Revenue is wrong and the county accessed it and they need to give a refund, they're on the hook. I don't like doing that to a county, nor to the state, nor, frankly, to the taxpayer. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I've got Derek Bell and Jared Isom here from our TPR to discuss the fiscal note, and I'll stand for any questions, and I ask you to do pass Senate Bill 54. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Further proponents speaking to the fiscal note?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Derek Bell, B-E-L-L, as the Director indicated. I am the Division Administrator for the Department of Revenue's Business and Income Tax Division. Happy to answer any questions you may have today, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents? Welcome, Mr. Galt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Galt, and I am here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. We very much appreciate the position and the attitude with the director and the Department of Revenue and the administration. We support this bill. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents, Mr. Bryson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bryson. That's B-R-Y-S-O-N. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. Mr. Chair, committee members, I want to thank the Department of Revenue for bringing us into this conversation early on so we can get a good understanding of what the intent of the bill is, and specifically on the fiscal note. As Director Beatty indicated, there are some assumptions in there in that there's volatility in centrally assessed and that they'll always go up. Well, we commented in the fiscal note talking about what that potential loss of revenue would be for on a two-year appraisal cycle. In our estimation, we make up for it if it's accurate and done on a two-year cycle. What we might miss in that lag time from 1 year to year two, we'll make up for in year three if they get the time and the ability to negotiate an actual reasonable rate, reduce the conflict that's associated with centrally assessed, and the counties can plan with some predictability about what that's going to look like into the future. This is a good bill, and the fiscal note, I think, is on if you agree with those assumptions. But I would say that our comments from the county are accurate in that this does not have a negative impact on us if tax assessments are right and there are less complaints about that process. So please support.
Thank you. What are the proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Feiss, F-E-I-S-S, General Manager of Broadband Montana, used to be known as Montana Telecommunications Association, representing rural community-based local rural broadband providers serving throughout Montana. I don't have much more to say other than there was an amendment, and I appreciate the work of the department working with stakeholders to extend the period in which an objection can be filed. And we just appreciate working with the department and their acknowledgement of stakeholders' concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any proponents online, Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no proponents online.
Any opponents? Any opponents? Seeing none online, any informational witnesses? Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jared Isom, I-S-O-M. I'm an economist with the Department of Revenue. I put together these estimates for the fiscal notes, and I'm here to answer any questions you have on that.
Thank you, Mr. Isom. Further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Vice Chair Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question for the Department of Revenue, and I don't know who would be best to ask. But I was just curious why railroads were excluded from the every two-year appraisal. It's the only centrally assessed entity that's not going to go to the 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Ellis, that's a great question. The reason for that is it's actually the result of a federal act quite a long time ago in the late 1990s, and it required the Department of Revenue to arrive at a formula. And it was nationwide, right? Basically, the way it worked prior to this formula was the states kind of had a captive right there, right? It wasn't like the railroad was going to pick up and move if they didn't like their taxes. And so states, maybe this one too, might have been a little aggressive. The feds said, you don't get to do that or we're going to come in hard. And so there's actually an equation that the railroads are appraised on, and it's an ABC appraisal. It's already in statute, and it's done that way, and it takes no time. And because of the nature of that equation, there's has yet in my career to be a dispute.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Further questions? Seeing none. Senator, would you care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for a good hearing. I believe these numbers are included already in the governor's budget proposal. So, and as usual, I brought lots of friends with me to support this. It's a little bit smaller fiscal note than the last request here, but Mr. Chair, I would request a due pass on this. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator. We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 54. And we will now open the hearing on Senate Bill 89.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's my honor to be in front of you today. For the record, Ryan Lynch, Senate District 37 out of Butte, America, and I am carrying this bill at the request of the Criminal Justice Oversight Council. And so Criminal Justice Oversight Council, we studied a lot of issues, obviously, around the criminal justice system, hence the name. One of the ideas that we are looking to replicate that came out of a number of other states that has tremendous impact on populations and saves significant money is a pretrial diversion program. So this bill was in conjunction with the county attorneys to the fiscal note. What we're looking for is the Department of Justice is looking for two FTEs to manage this program. So it's a new program per se. It's in cooperation with the locals, and it is going to be housed within the DOJ at the Justice the. I can't think of the name of the bureau, but it's essentially the bureau that helps the county attorneys when there may be a capital case or something that happens within a crime within their community. They can reach out to the Attorney General's office, and they provide that extra professional service there to help the locals. So with that, Mr. Chair, I am looking forward to a good, fair hearing and lots of questions from the robust discussion this afternoon.
Thank you, Senator. Any proponents of the bill? Welcome again.
Good afternoon, Chair Hesp and members of the committee. Once again, for the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, here supporting SB 89 on behalf of the Montana County Attorneys Association and the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. I don't know if it's the late hour or the content of the bill, but we cleared the room out, and I think it's just the two of us, so hopefully we can answer your questions. Again, this is another bill out of the Criminal Justice Oversight Council that took the entire interim to evaluate what policies were and were not passed with criminal justice reinvestment and reform. And it became really clear that not passing a pretrial diversion program in 2017 was a missing component. And if we can target this population of first-time nonviolent offenders with drug offenses, divert them out of the criminal justice system, get them the treatment they need, that it will be a benefit to the taxpayers of Montana. It's hard to conceptualize how a program like this would work in 56 counties in Montana because they're so vastly different. You can't compare Yellowstone County to Dawson County. They don't have the same resources. They don't have the same services. They don't have the same funding. So we landed on the option of a pilot program. It will give us the opportunity to see what works in different sizes of communities and different types of communities. And then hopefully we can come back with some data and some proven outcomes to help craft a pretrial diversion program that works across the state. So I would encourage you to move this forward. We think it's good policy, and it'll help help overall with our criminal justice system and getting people the treatment they need when they need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbertson. Further proponents in the room? Further proponents? Seeing none, any online? Mr. Olson?
There's nobody currently online, Mr. Chairman.
Any opponents in the room? Any opponents? Any opponents online? Seeing none. Any informational witnesses? Seeing none. Any informational witnesses online? Seeing none. Questions from the committee of the two lonely souls still in the room? I have one.
Hi.
Oh, Senator Cuff, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the sponsor. Senator Lynch, and what I was, we have some drug courts ongoing now, and I'm wondering, is this in a, it sounds somewhat like it's addressing a similar kind of population, but maybe a little broader or bigger and not as deep. And that's my concern, is are we doubling up programs, additional costs, doing the same thing? And that's not addressed here because they're two different things, but it...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a fabulous question. And if you think really it's a continuum of care. And so this would actually be a pre-conviction diversion. So drug courts are currently, you have to plead guilty to a felony and you go to a drug court for 18, you know, up to 18 months is really that length of stay within the drug court. What this is it gives the discretion, and there's no mandatory anything. It gives the option to the local prosecutor to divert that person out before they may even enter a drug court or even go further deeper into the system. So the purpose of this, and I'm straying a little bit on the policy side, Mr. Chair, with your indulgences, but the purpose of this is really those low-level drug offenders that get caught up in something that we know, you know, that not we, but the local county attorney says, you know, hey, there's actually something here. Let's not put them through the system. Let's not convict them with a felony and all of the things that go with the associated loss of employment, loss of housing, loss of family relationships. And ultimately what happens is the state pays for the courtroom. You know, they pay for the presiding judge, they pay for OPD, obviously certain local resources that are spent on the prosecution side of the house. You know, the locals have the jails, and then we go into the state side of the house. Those are all general fund spends, whether it's a, you know, property tax dollar, an income tax dollar. If you're the taxpayer in Butte, America, it's a right pocket, left pocket. It's a tax dollar savings. So what this does is it hopes it will plug them into services early, and it'll be responsive to each of the communities that elect to participate in it. Lessons learned will be shared, and ultimately hopefully get that person the help that they need and get them on their way without that whole big general fund spend in the middle, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator, just a question on a different issue. So it looks like maybe Senate Judiciary amended the bill. Some, do you suspect that lessened the fiscal note or had any effect at all on it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, honestly, no, it didn't impact the fiscal note because the fiscal note really talks about the two FTEs that it would take to run it. It was amended at some soft opposition from AFP and ACLU. So I think everybody should be scared when the two of them are in agreement. I know certainly it's always an interesting moment.
Senator Ellis, Vice Chair Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lynch, I just was interested in any insight you might have on the termination date in 2029. Why 2029?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a member of our party that really liked the termination date. And I think, and honestly, I think it's fair. It's 100% fair. I think that, you know, it's a pilot program. And so I think we should actually take a look at it. If it's not working, we should get rid of it.
Further questions from the committee? Senator McGilvray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lynch. So just to clarify, you got the two FTEs, but if you don't have the program, then the individual goes down a different track, the county attorney, prosecution, public defender, defense, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGilvray, that's correct. So if they don't enter into that diversion piece, and there's been some diversion programs, Missoula County has one that stood up currently. Yellowstone County had one. It went away for lack of resources and just coordination. And there may be others out there that I'm not familiar with, but currently what happens is that offender is prosecuted, as you know, they're prosecuted. They may go to trial. They may plea out. then they wind up in the system. So they wind up with a public defender, they wind up in front of a court, they wind up in the correctional system, and what this is attempting to do is to divert those folks out, get them help, and hopefully never ever see them in the courtroom.
Follow-up, Senator.
I see you signed the fiscal note. Why didn't you make the case that about the savings that you get from this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGivern, I had that debate with myself. Ultimately, I agree that we do need the resource, you know, centrally to help coordinate. And so it's tough to say. I can anecdotally argue you're going to save way more money than you're going to put into this, but I don't have any data or evidence to back that up to put in the fiscal note.
Okay, thank you.
What are the questions?
If I could do one more.
Senator Cuff.
Senator Lynch. Now, it used to be not unusual that there would be a deferral of sentencing for a period of time as long as a person stayed out of trouble. If they got in trouble, they came back and they got sentenced. Does this include something like a deferral? It can't be a deferral because it's not been to a judge. But could it be a delayed prosecution, or is it simply in lieu of?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, all of that. So it was very flexible. If you look at new section 4, you know, if you look on page 3, new section 4, line 24, the court may conduct a change of plea hearing. It was a shall. So there's one other place we changed that as well. But what it did was really in new section 2, it said you need to get an evaluation. You need to follow that evaluation. And then on page 2, line 28, the diversion agreement, there's a big word called if. So if a diversion agreement is entered into. So really what it is it's very flexible and designed by nature, and that's to allow that local county attorney, if they want the diversion agreement and a guilty plea before they can enter, they can have that, basically put it on the shelf. Or if they want to say, hey, I'm willing to give you a chance before you enter that guilty plea, it's really up to the folks that are involved in that particular instance. But there's a carrot and a stick.
Further questions? Seeing none, Senator, would you care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Go Green.
This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 89. Members of the committee, we do have some bills that we heard today we could do executive on if there's no objections. There are a couple of them that are having amendments prepared. We have one we heard the other day that there is an amendment ready for. But before we go to that, I just wanted to ask you to consider some things. Now, we have been lucky enough lately to get a room at 2:30 or 3, but when we do that, you all miss your afternoon committees or have to make choices. So we could instead start meeting in about an hour from now, and then we wouldn't have the conflicts with your committees. And so I guess I'm looking for your advice if you'd rather meet early and have the conflicts or meet later and not have the conflicts. So, Senator Morgeau.
Mr. Chairman, we've also been getting the election security and the there's only, I think, a couple of us on that, though, but that one's been typically getting scheduled on Thursdays at 4:30.
Any other thoughts on it, Senator Bartel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that I would prefer the conflict. A lot of times in, you know, later in the day, we have other obligations, and it's really hard. You know, it's just hard.
Anybody else?
I would, Mr. Chair, I'd like to consider if we might be able to do something like at, say, 11 o'clock, 11 or 11:30, and run into the lunch hour if we needed to.
Senator, I think there's a couple subcommittees that meet right up till noon, sometimes a little after. Senator Glimp's probably on one of them. So I think maybe later and after subcommittee's over, we can meet in the morning. But it's just the meantime, and it seems like Energy Committee, which meets Tuesdays and Thursdays in here, is having less bills to them, at least at the present time. Senator McGilvray is on, chairs the other committee that meets in here in the evening or at 3 o'clock, and he's been pretty busy.
Mr. Chair, I just recommend everybody vote yes on SJ2, and you'll save an hour a day from deleting emails.
could I second that motion, Senator? So, well, if you have any thoughts on that, get back to me privately if you want. But we're going to meet next Thursday at the same time because this room's available next Thursday. But after that, I'm willing to look at anything that you would want to do. So, Senator Vance.
Thank you, Chair Esp. Just my two cents. I would rather keep it during the day, if at all possible, because I'm no good after about 5. Thank you.
Well, Senator Vance, Senator Glim can have your proxy then. I mean, at some point we'll have to work late nights because that's just how the thing works when you get close to transmittal. But let's move on to another issue. Do you want, we just heard a bill.
If I might say, yes, Monday, sir. Wednesday, Thursday, I think, is it 4 people, Senator Vance, that we have on, Senator Bartel, myself, you, I'm thinking we have 4 that sit on state administration.
Senator Ellis.
And Ellis, yeah. So, you know, that's something to bear in mind. If we can go Tuesdays, Thursdays, we're not meeting then, and if there's not as many conflicting someplace else.
Yeah. Well, that's how it's worked out so far. Senator Lang.
There's also 4 on this committee that meet at Tuesdays and Thursdays at 3 o'clock, too. So
yeah.
It's been a little tough. We'll just work through it. Maureen.
Well, the other option is we could come in at 7 in the morning, meet till 9, let subcommittees go to work at 9.
Yeah, yours do. With Mike and mine go at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Let's move on from that issue. Now that we cleared it all up. We just heard a bill by Senator Lynch, Senate Bill 89. Does anybody have an objection to doing executive action on that bill right now? If not, Senator Glim.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 89 do pass.
Heard the motion, Senator Glim. Is there any discussion on the bill? We just, but it should be fresh in our minds. Seeing none, let's try a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. We have any proxies? Senator Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to figure out who's not here. I know I have Senator Boldman votes aye by proxy, and Senator Flowers and Senator Pope votes aye by proxy, all 3.
Everybody here?
Who's that? Who's over there?
Oh, Solomon.
So we're getting Solomon. Close to unanimous.
And Solomon votes aye by proxy, and Bogner votes aye by proxy.
So motion carries unanimously. Senate Bill 89 will go to third reading. So the other day we heard Senate Bill 70, and it's probably in your packet, and there is an amendment prepared for it. If we can pass that amendment around, we can probably deal with it. It's a pretty simple amendment.
Chairman, I move Senate Bill 70 do pass.
Motion's been made on Senate Bill 70. Would you move that amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 70 be amended, and I move SB 0070.001.001 Senate Bill 70.
So there's been a motion to amend, and you're almost all have it now. It changes the last page of the bill where it used to say in current law that the department shall prorate the repayment assistance amounts accordingly. And that was crossed out and said they'll request a supplemental. So this amendment just goes back to the old language. If it looks like they're going to use the appropriation up, they'll prorate the repayment amounts under this amendment. And it's actually an amendment I had prepared, so I just think that we have to, we're responsible to control costs, and if the House Bill 2 doesn't have the appropriation in it, then we're asking the superintendent to control costs to the appropriation.
Mr. Chair, I think that's prudent.
Any further discussion on the amendment?
Question.
Aye. Seeing none, we will vote on the amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Proxies.
Senator Solomon and Senator Bogner both vote aye.
Senator Boldman, Flowers, and Pope all vote aye.
Motion carries unanimously. We're back on the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 70 as once amended.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in, we'll try a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
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 Sai, can we go to... well, let's try this. We have two no's. Senator McGillivray and Senator
Lenz
are no's. The rest of us are ayes. Senator Glenn.
Senator Solomon votes aye by proxy. Senator Bogner votes aye by proxy.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Pope, Boldman, and Flowers all vote aye by proxy.
So the motion carries. Senate Bill 70 will go, I don't know if it will go to second reading or third reading because we amended it. So
back to second, Mr. Chairman.
Back to second. Is there any other in the bills we heard today that anybody wants to amend other than the Senate Bill 132? Senator Ellis, are you going to get those amendments prepared? How about Senate Bill 19? Anybody have any angst with doing Senate Bill 108?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 108 do pass.
Motion's been made to move to pass Senate Bill 108. Any discussion?
Question.
Seeing none, try a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Proxies.
Senator Solomon, Senator Bogner vote aye by proxy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boldman, Flowers, and Pope vote aye by proxy.
Motion carries. Senate Bill 19 is one we did today.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 19 do pass. This was by Senator Regeer, generally revised disorderly conduct sentencing laws.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boldman said she had an amendment for this bill.
All right.
I don't have that.
We'll put it back in our packet.
She told
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my motion. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 54 do pass. Generally revised centrally assessed properties by Senator Hertz.
Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Proxies.
Senator Solomon votes aye by proxy. Senator Bogner votes aye by proxy.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Pope, Flowers, and Boldman all vote aye by proxy.
The motion carries. That may be as far as we can go today. Anybody else have anything else for the good of the order?
So, Mr. Chair, 19 and 132 go back in the file.
Yes. potential amendments. And then we still have Senator Usher's bill from the other day with potential amendments. Just a note to you that are committee vice chairs. We are going to try to meet some morning next week for a joint meeting with the chairs to go over some procedures and things for joint for subcommittees. And that'll come out to you via Teams or email. Anything else? Thank you all for, yes, Senator Vance.
My apologies, Chair Asp. Have we taken action on Senate Bill 126? I don't know if it's...
Nope.
We have not. Okay, so that stays in the file. So, thank you.
Oh, no, I know what that is now. That's going to stay for a while. So, any further business? Seeing none, meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. He requires a smaller.